Good evening and welcome to The Balanced Mind. Well, today is going to be very special. For the first time, we have a guest, and I'm very honored to introduce you to Yolanda. Yolanda, welcome to The Balanced Mind, and we are looking forward to getting to know you. So first tell me, who are you? Tell us a bit about yourself.
Hi Dion, I'm very honored to be your first guest, I have to say. So my name is Yolanda and I am a group facilitator at Vista Clinic. So I have been at Vista for more than a decade, I don't want to give my age away, but for quite some time where I've been specializing in mental health and doing psychoeducation, and today I'm going to talk to you and your listeners about a very interesting topic.
Yes, we are going to talk about grief, but before we get into it, I just want to say I know you for, I've counted about 8 years.
It's been that long?
Yes.
You're, okay.
I worked at the clinic in 2015, 16 and 17, but you know me actually longer than I know you.
That's true.
Yes, you know my name and my story and stuff.
Yes.
But yeah, so we know each other quite a time, and I must admit, I always, whenever Yolanda presents a class or presents something at the group or at the church or something, I'm always the one who, I want to listen, because whatever she says is good stuff. So that's why I asked her to be our guest, because yeah, I have really a lot of respect for her.
Oh, thank you, Don, and hopefully we can tackle this topic and it can be really meaningful to the audience and that they get something from it today. Because, I mean, that's the idea behind it. And we need to talk about these things.
Yeah, so let's dive deep into this. Today we're talking about grief. Now, just to say why I chose this time and date to ask to talk about it, it's because this time of the year is December and Christmas is approaching. And then many times when we have grief in our lives, we tend to struggle a bit more.
That's very true.
And we can't avoid it, so let's work with it. So that's the idea with the podcast today. So we're just going to have a few questions, like you know me by now, listeners. I like asking questions and discussing it. And just one thing, usually I start with what is grief and stuff, but today I want to start with, when you talk about grief, we're not just talking about you losing a loved one. It is not just about losing a loved one, there's other circumstances as well. So let's start there.
I think, and it is, it's important to understand, and the reason why during, let's say, like the festive times, people struggle specifically with grief and the loss of loved ones, is we have a specific expectation. If you close your eyes right now, or when you're a little boy or a little girl and you thought about Christmas, you know, you thought about your family, you thought about that what you see on the TV.
Yes, yes.
And sometimes, now that we've lost that, maybe it's a person or the house, or the tree, or maybe someone that you imagine to be part of that picture, it's sometimes very difficult for us to let go of that because the picture looks different. And that's what we say, it's like grief isn't just the loss of a person. Grief takes many different forms.
Yes.
So
yes.
Before we get into, well, let's get into these different forms.
There's that thing.
Okay, so the very first form of grief that we get, I think, is the obvious one, the loss of
a loved one. Yes.
Of a loved one. And people really struggle with that because, believe it or not, we do believe that people will be there forever. I mean,
it does, right? You just think, especially the one you love, right? That person is going to be there all the time. You are going to, and they also, you look forward to things that still to come, and you know that person will be part of it.
Exactly.
And then all of a sudden, that person is not there, and life hits you.
It's kind of like it's, you know, on some level, we know these people aren't going to be there forever, but it's almost like it's not real. We know, but we don't know. And that's why it kind of like hits you and that picture changes.
Yes, I wonder if we know but we don't accept the thing that he or she is not going to be there forever. Because, I mean, my mom was one of those people, you met her once. We thought she's going to live to 100 because she said she wanted to live to 100 and she passed away on 69 and yeah, so.
And it is, and we do think these people are going to be there forever. So that's kind of the first grief that we have, and I think that's the one most people are very familiar with, is the losing of a loved one. And I almost kind of say that for many people that feels like the true grief, and as you listeners can't see, but I'm putting in quotation marks very often that is what's seen as true grief. But other forms that grief can take is anticipatory grief.
Yes.
So anticipatory grief is the grief where there's illness or there's an impending breakup or there's a deterioration in health. And it's this, you can see it coming and slowly but surely you start looking at, oh, but I know what's going to happen next. Eventually, I'm not going to be able to walk anymore.
Yes.
I'm not going to be able to see anymore. This person isn't going to be there anymore. For me, I'm a very big pet lover. And, you know, when the years start ticking by and they start walking slower and they can't jump on the furniture anymore and they start eating very, then, because you know what's coming next.
Yeah, you know that their life is coming to an end, or the quality of life.
Exactly.
The quality of life is taking taking off, you know. Yeah.
So some people struggle with anticipatory grief. In another form we might have is disenfranchised grief. And I think this is the one where most people, and I will explain. I think this is the one where most people, we experience that grief in our lives more often than not. But it's almost like it doesn't have the same stance or place as grief. So disenfranchised grief is grief that isn't socially recognized or validated. And these include things like having a miscarriage, losing a pet, divorce, ending of a friendship, ending of a relationship, losing of opportunities, infertility.
And the thing about losing opportunities, people don't grasp it. And then they say something, you know what, there'll be another day, or there will come another opportunity. It's not about another opportunity, it's about saying goodbye to what you almost had.
And that brings me back to what I started off with. People really underestimate how much we construct our lives in our heads before we live it. You create this idea of the people that's going to be in your life, the things that are going to be in your life, the things that happen to you, and it's like the blueprint you've given yourself to live. And then one day, like you said, it hits you like a bullet train, and those things aren't there, and that picture is ripped away from you, and you mourn the loss of what would have been or what could have been more than the actual reality sometimes. And that's a big one, and that's why disenfranchised grief for me stands out so much, because a lot of time people are just like, why are you feeling like this? You know, you shouldn't, like, it's just a dog, or you can always get married again, or but it's really the loss of that.
It's not, people don't comfort another person by saying you'll get married again or you'll get another pet. I mean, my pet is about to, her life is drawing to a close. And honestly, my thought is there, yes, you can get another pet, but that's not what it's about. It's about grieving, because you knew a certain circumstance. It's not about replacing it.
With familiarity comes safety.
Yes,
so
yes.
It's familiar to, I mean, we can joke about, everyone is always joking about their jobs and how much they their jobs, and then you lose that job, and then someone's like grieving that job or grieving that position that they've lost, and then there's like, but why? Do you know how many people struggle when they retire?
Oh yeah, that's a big one.
How many people I've met, and I mean, I'm in my 30s and I'm romanticizing going for retirement.
Yeah.
But still here in Vista Clinic, we do see people. I see with my parents' friends, with my friends' parents, how the minute they kind of get to retirement age, they kind of lost that purpose.
Yeah. It's about, okay, I don't work anymore, so let's stop. But the thing is, as a human being, you need to continue to work. It just means, don't think about it, go sitting on a stoop and that's it. You still need to work. You still need to go on.
But it's it is, but it's also a little bit more than that, because it comes down to losing a role.
Oh, yeah.
You're losing a role, you're losing a purpose. And those are the same things with, and that's a different type of grief we're going to get to, but, you know, losing a child very often, it's a big grief, and it is a tremendous loss. But very often, one of the things that these parents really struggle with is, and I hear it so often, and they say, I'm no longer a mom. I'm no longer a dad.
Oh.
And that hits me every time, because people's like, it's not just, I've lost this role, I've lost this thing that was really, took up so much space in my mind, in my heart, in my everyday.
Yes.
Not that that completely compares to losing a job or something, there's different levels of that. But when you lose a job or you enter into a new stage of life, that's also an example of disenfranchised grief. Saying goodbye to your youth, you know?
Yeah,
saying goodbye to the things that you used to do.
Careless. Carelessness. You mature and grow up and then you need to take on responsibilities.
Exactly. And it is 100% normal to get to a stage where you just feel, I miss that. For me, like when I listen to music of my teens, I get so nostalgic, thinking back, and you get that ache in your heart.
Yes, that is.
Yeah, so that's an example of disenfranchised grief. Then we have ambiguous grief. Now, ambiguous grief is when the person is still alive, but psychologically or relationally, they're lost.
Welcome back to The Balanced Mind. We are talking to Yolanda.
Hello.
And we are talking about grief. But let's continue where we stopped just before the break about ambiguous grief. Let's dive into that. Please tell us what is that about?
Yes, we left our listeners on a cliffhanger of ambiguous grief. So ambiguous grief is, just to recap, it's when a person is still alive. So they're still here in a physical form, but psychologically or relationally, it's lost. They're not there anymore. So an example of this would be a parent or a loved one that suffers from dementia. So they themselves, the body, the person is still here.
Oh, I see.
But that role they fulfilled in their life, who they were, that's lost. Or someone who had a stroke or a brain injury and now no longer functions in that role or capacity that they did before that incident. Things like addiction. Addiction can also be an example of ambiguous grief. That brother you knew, that mother, that child, that person you knew, they change when the drug takes over or when the addiction takes over. So it's not that person anymore. It's not that. So that loss. And a strange parent, when you no longer have contact with your parents or with children or loved ones. Breakups where there's no closure, when they just come out of nowhere, you get ghosted, and that's the end of that.
I think this also happens to a lot of people in this the gay community, because relationships is not something people build on. They rather go on the thing they see and feel. They're not going on something they can trust or rely on.
Yes.
And then people get ghosted and, no, you're not good enough, or I don't want you, or something. And I think that's when it comes in.
Yeah, and that grief, and it plays a big role, and especially in this community, because more often than not, this community experiences more rejection.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
More rejection from other people. And it's so weird, because although that pain of rejection is there, you also experience that rejection within the community. And that's catch-22, because you would think that people that experience so much rejection would be more aware of how their rejection would affect other people.
Yes.
But it happens, I say.
Yes.
Then we have, so for example, immigration or leaving home. These are all types of ambiguous grief.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so let's go on.
Okay, so we have one left, and that would be a cumulative or layered grief. So layered grief is when you lose many things, not necessarily just people, but that would be an example of I might lose my pet, and while I lose my pet, a week or so later or a month or so, I go through a breakup, and a little bit later, I might move houses and move to a different town. All of those things, as a society, as a community, we might stand outside and be like, oh, that's not
such a big thing, but it's, remember, that one is lost. In that place, you felt safe. And the moment you don't feel safe anymore, you know, that, and you grieve that. You grieve the safety you used to have.
You do. And I think this is why this topic is so very important, because we think that the only seat grief has at the table, we think the only seat grief has at the table is when it's the loss of a person.
Exactly, and it's not.
And it's not. There are so many different types and forms of grief. And then also a non-death loss, meaning that a non-death loss, like loss of identity, children leaving home, losing your youth, like we talked about earlier,
losing
your routine, trauma, major life changes. All of these things are things to be mourned. All of these things are a change in your everyday. All of these things really hurt. And I do think it's important that people take a moment, stop and talk about it. Pause when I act.
So, Yolanda, obviously many people ask, one of the most common questions people ask about grief is, how long do I need to grieve? Or how long will I feel so sad?
That would be me asking you, how long is a piece of string?
Exactly. It's a very difficult answer. There's no set answer for that.
There isn't. And it has to be taken into consideration. Like, obviously, if we have a grief and or a loss and we sit with that for many, many years, and it becomes, we become dysfunctional in that, then we do talk about, in clinical terms, we talk about complex grief, and it is a bit different than just normal grief. But grief, in the new age of talking and thinking about grief, isn't letting go or moving on. You know, it's kind of this thing where people are like, you need to let go. And I think the new movement and understanding in grief is how to effectively move forward with a new reality. So, and I like that. I like it's not like letting go, but it's
how... Because you can't let go of something. I mean, that the thing that you lost was very important to you. You can't just cut it with scissors and say, there you go, it's done and dealt with. I mean, if it was like that, it would be so much easier, but it's... No, it's not. It's so much deeper.
It is so much deeper. No, it is very deep. And, you know, it's important to understand that grief is normal. And for me, there's this picture. And if you're on social media, you've probably seen this picture before. And it's one of the best ways of grief is explained to me.
Yeah.
So I know you guys can't see us, but I want you to imagine in your mind's eye, there's a jar. Okay?
Okay.
And in this jar, there's a big bowl. And when our grief or our loss has just happened, it's almost like this ball becomes, it takes up the entire jar. There's no space for anything else but that grief that's in there.
Yeah.
There's nothing else that can fit in there.
Yes.
And then over time, people think that the ball gets smaller. As we deal with grief, this grief ball gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, creating more space around it for other things. But that's the furthest thing from the truth, and that is what I love about this depiction and this idea. Because the ball doesn't get smaller, the jar gets bigger. we develop around the grief. In the beginning, this ball is this big, and that ball and the pain and the magnitude of that loss doesn't get less.
No, but you learn to cope or learn to live with it.
You learn to live with it. You learn to grow around it. You learn to move with it.
Also, then I want to jump in and say, it doesn't disappear or grow smaller, but you learn to have a good quality of life despite of that big ball.
Exactly.
The thing is, it doesn't disappear. You just learn to live with it, but have a good quality of life, still having your grief.
You'd learn to create space around the grief. And
yeah,
because I think grief is the ultimate price we pay for love. Because there's this saying that they say, you know, grief is love with nowhere to go.
Yeah, wow.
And it is. You can't grieve something that you haven't dearly loved, or dearly cared for, or dearly appreciated. If it wasn't something that had true impact on your life, that you truly nurtured and truly cherished, you wouldn't be mourning it. It wouldn't be grief. You wouldn't feel that emotion towards it. So it is so important to understand that we have to create space around this feeling, but we want to remember these individuals, these things, because it was deeply loved. It was deeply cherished.
Yeah, no, for sure. Wow, it's really grief is really a topic that's not easily grasped.
No.
And I think in our society as a whole, people miss that. They miss the importance of grief, and they don't really understand how to handle grief.
I think people also miss and don't understand the benefit of just standing still for long enough for their emotions to catch up. We living in a rat race these days, and it's all about what's the next thing that needs to happen. It's all about making sure that I get that raise at work, making sure that I pay the bills. It's becoming this really rat race of the one thing after the next that we don't take time to actually check in with ourselves. We don't take time.
It's true. It's sad, but true.
It's very sad. Very true. So we don't take time to actually sit and look at the things that we admire and that we love, and take time to grieve it when it's lost, and take time to check in with our emotions. And I think this is also why people struggle with grief so much, because they don't take the time to, when it happens, to heal. It's about your question earlier. Okay, this loss has happened. How long is it going to take? And you see it when people come for therapy. They'll tell you, they'll say, okay, how many sessions am I going
to need it?
Yeah.
How much is needed to be through this and then it's dealt with?
Yes, how many sessions do I need so that I can get over this? And I once saw a gentleman who he went through a divorce, but this was his second divorce. And it hit him really, really hard. And he was in a session and he says, I just wish it was 2 years later. And I'm like, and I asked the question, I asked why?
Why 2 years later? What's happening in 2 years?
What's happening in 2 years? Exactly. Why specifically 2 years later? And he says, no, it took him 2 years to get over his first divorce. So he knows that it's going to take him 2 years to get over this divorce. And he just wants to skip all that pain and heartache and be 2 years later.
But he's going to stumble. I mean, he's not necessarily going to be 2 years.
Not necessarily.
Might be a year or shorter, and obviously maybe longer.
Exactly.
It depends on the... Oh.
And that's what I had to remind him as well. I had to remind him, but through your first loss, you didn't necessarily have the skills that you have this time.
Yes.
You didn't necessarily have the support system. You learned through the previous loss. And so it looks different, and time is a man-made thing. Your emotions don't listen to time.
No, there's no connection between time and emotions, not at all. So now we're going to talk about the different stages of grief. I think many of us heard of the stages. Many of us don't agree with the stages. Some may say there's more or there's less. But let's talk about the five stages of grief. Yolanda, can you Name those five stages quickly.
Okay, I can. And it's important for us. This is such an important part of grief. So it is understood that Kubler-Ross is the main kunain when it comes to the stages of grief. And she identified these elements. And the stages would be denial. So yes. Normally when people experience a loss initially, they can't accept it. That's a lack of acceptance of that they're in the situation. From the stage of denial, you move to anger. Anger towards the situation. It's very often anger towards God. Anger towards the environment. Anger towards that person. Okay. After the anger stage comes the bargaining stage. You know, like if how can this be better? I'm gonna make better choices. I'm gonna change the way I do things so that it gets better for me. Then there's the depression phase or stage. That's just the kind of complete down emotives, no emotions, feeling very sad, very depressed, very down. And then from there, the last and first stage is obviously the acceptance phase, where now I've accepted that this has happened. However, I'm going to throw a big spanner in your works. You knew it was coming. So the research Kubler-Ross had done in identifying these stages were based on terminally ill patients and not based on grieving families. So it was the stages that individuals who themselves were dying were based on, and not necessarily. Wow. And it's still to some extent applicable.
It's relevant, but it doesn't. It's not based on grief. It's alone.
That's such a beautiful way to say it. It's like it's based on. It has elements in it. It's nice elements to identify because these elements are definitely present in the grief process. But the truth is, grief is not linear. The truth is, grief is not, I'm going to be in this stage, and then I'm going to move to that stage.
Yeah, and the thing is, we talk about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen in that chronological order.
It's not going to happen in that order. You're not necessarily going to have all of those elements.
No.
You might have different elements. They might show up very different to you. You might not have a bargaining stage, for example. You might experience, and you circle back to them. And everyone thinks that, oh, I've gone through anger, so therefore I won't be angry again.
No.
You can kind of go from denial to anger to skip all the other steps, go to acceptance, and make your way back to anger. It really isn't linear. People bounce
not at all
between emotions. And there's no correct or incorrect timeline. No. Once again, we talked about it's not, I have to experience these five stages, I have to experience them in this order, I have to experience them in this timeline.
It's important what you said now about these are five elements, and these elements can help you identify emotions. And then you can say, bargaining is not so much for me a thing as anger or denial. Because the first thing people say, this is not true, this is not true, this is not true. But obviously, it's a shock and you're in denial. So you can use that element to recognize your own emotions. And here on the Balanced Mind, we talk a lot about emotions and how we need to handle it. And in my research, I saw the easier people can recognize what they're feeling, the more the more they can understand what they need to do or what they're going through.
I have this saying, especially in emotions, where I say, if you can name it, you can claim it.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
If you can say, this is what I'm feeling, or this is what's happening, you can start to do the internal work to see, okay, why is this? Where is it coming from? Why am I feeling it? And that's why we say with emotions, you don't graduate from grief. You don't go, oh, I'm done with grief. You grow with it.
Exactly.
That ball doesn't become smaller. The vessel becomes bigger.
Yes.
And that's
we learn to go with it, and we learn to have a better quality of life with it.
Exactly.
It's not going to disappear.
It is. And I think these stages, although it gives us context and structure to understand, I think we as human beings like things to be very neatly tied up in a bow. You know, it's our brains that
this is the package.
Yes, our brains want to do that. They want to, okay, so I have experienced this loss. I'm going to go through these five stages. It's going to take me about X amount of time to go through them, and then I'll be done. And we like that. And unfortunately, that's not how life, that's not how emotions.
No, that's not how we put together. They start, as a human, you're not put together like that.
That's not how grief works.
It's not
how any of those goes. So the stages are there and they're very interesting, but yeah, they're not necessarily a roller coaster identification roadmap of what you're going to go through.
No, not at all. But let's quickly talk about each of these elements. Giving a bit of a definition on what to expect when we have anger and so on. But let's first talk to the first one. The first one is denial. So denial is saying no, it didn't happen, or no, it's not true, or what are your thoughts?
I think denial is those. There's a big shock, and I think denial comes to the idea that I'm not ready to let go of the picture that I have in my mind.
The reality.
I'm not ready to have the full reality of this sink in. And I can take myself, for example. I had an uncle that committed suicide. And the uncle, myself and my uncle, we were very close. And he worked away a lot. Okay, so he worked away a lot. And I think for the first few months after his suicide, even after a few years after his suicide, I knew that he had passed. I knew he wasn't here anymore, but I still caught myself being like, oh, he's just working away.
He's somewhere. He's not here, but he's somewhere. But that reality of no, he's not somewhere, he's, all due respect, there's no way.
But it just gave you that sense of, in that moment, it just helped you hold on to a bit of a picture for a little bit longer.
Mm.
And I think that's what denial is. Denial isn't, I'm to the point where I'm denying that this has happened. Denial can also be that it's not going to be that bad, you know, or denial can be that something else will replace this, or we're trying to create a new narrative as quickly as possible without standing still long enough to realize that my truth is this now.
Yeah. The new reality,
new reality.
Yeah.
And that's denial. That's what it's all about.
Okay, the next one is anger.
Anger!
And that's pretty, although it's pretty obvious, because I think whenever we breathe, we are angry. We're angry it happened. We're angry that safe space left us. Abandoned us, really. Yeah.
Anger and fear are protective emotions.
Yes.
So whenever we experience emotions that are ambiguous, or emotions that we don't understand, or emotions that are too overwhelming, our body is going to go into a natural response of a fight and flight response, and it's going to want to protect us. And the most protective emotions out there or anger and fear.
Yeah.
So you're either going to have a lot of anxiety when there's a grief,
or
your body's going to go towards that anger, because when you're angry, you're powerful. When you're angry, you're like, ugh. And it's a physical...
And people make way.
Yeah.
I've noticed it's not really angry people, like, take a step back and say, just go ahead, you know, it's fine, go. Yeah, make way.
No, very true. So, that anger is there, and it serves a purpose. And I think within the stages of this, I don't think we should just see that stage of grief as just the anger stage, because I think during that stage we can almost give it like the emotion stage. It's just this flood of emotions that are coming. It's just these very strong feelings physiologically that I'm feeling in my body, and I don't really know what to do with them or where they're going to go.
You know what to do with them. What must I do with this emotion? Usually with emotion, people experience it and they can name it, but they don't know what to do with it.
Exactly.
And that's where things start getting skewed. You know, people...
Yes.
People, their coping mechanisms are not too good.
Very true.
But we're going to talk about coping just now. Let's quickly touch on bargaining.
Okay, so Dion, how do you understand bargaining? Let's use grief as well. How do you think that bargaining looks like?
So my first response to this question was, okay, I thought of some sort of negotiation, but then I thought to myself, how can I negotiate grief? I mean, something is gone. I can't negotiate with something that's not there, but yet we do it, clearly.
Yeah, okay, so you're correct. You can't bargain or with the person or the situation that's no longer there, but we tend to bargain with the things that are. So, for example, sometimes people might bargain with God or a higher power.
Yes.
Let's say it's someone that has dementia or someone that's in the ICU or something like that. We'll bargain things like, if this person gets healed, God, I'll do
I will do this and this and this.
I'll do this and this. If you bring this person back to me, I'll promise I'll change. Like maybe in a breakup or something like that. We tend to bargain with the universe or fate. And these are things that, and people have said this. These are things like, why didn't I make her go to the doctor? You know, why didn't I make her go to the doctor sooner? If I had taken her to the doctor, she would have been alive. I think it's not blame. In this regard, it's not blaming. It's kind of bargaining in terms of how the situation would have looked different.
If I did something.
If I did. If only I did that. If only. So it's the absence of blame. I'm not blaming that this happened because I didn't do that. But I'm taking on, yes, if only I called soon. If only I checked in.
Yeah.
If only I did this. If only I answered the phone when they phoned the first time.
But if you answer those questions, it would not make any difference. People might say, no, but it would make a difference. But really? Would it really make a big difference?
And but in our minds, when we bargain with grief, that's what we think. So we think if I, like in a breakup, if I change, maybe they'll come back. If I have this beautiful glow up or whatever, they'll go back. But that wasn't the problem. They didn't like you because you didn't look a certain way. The relationship broke down. And we tend to bargain with ourselves as well. And these are things that help us cope. So, for example, if I keep busy, maybe I won't feel the pain. If I don't cry, I won't fall apart. If I pretend this isn't happening, maybe it's not. So bargaining isn't just that understanding of, please, God, if you would bring this person back to me, I'll do whatever. And I think that's how most people understand it.
Many people have this thing that, God, if you return this person, I'll go into ministry.
Yes.
But bargaining can also be very complicated.
Okay, so the last two, and I don't think we're going to stand on these ones for quite some time, that's depression. And I think in your show, and you have talked a lot about depression, so that's just where there's that complete emotional sadness, there's dysfunction, not getting out of the bed, not wanting to go anywhere, not getting to. And I think that's when the reality of it all really, really just sinks in. The truth is now there. You are faced with the ugly face of the reality, and now you have to deal with it.
I just want to jump in there and just say that when you have depression symptoms, it is necessary sometimes to go and see a health professional.
Not sometimes, always.
Okay, always, but I think when it comes to that stage, we can't get out of bed, when you can't manage, when you can't go on with life,
yes,
then there is depression that can be treated.
Yes, that's
and will help you.
Yes.
So that for me is important for people to know. It's fine to go and ask for help. It's actually better, it's the best, because you're not going to be, it's not the thing that you're going to struggle for the rest of your life, it is just in this time period we're in, where you get some external help.
Yes, and I think when they make these stages, you know, they call it depression, but it doesn't refer to like clinical depression for everyone.
It's just a depressive state.
But for some people, that depressive state can go over to clinical depression. And that's when it's important to reach out, find help.
And that's where I'll come from, yes.
Exactly.
Okay, let's go on to the final one.
And our final stage is the acceptance.
And people want to jump all the four previous ones, and now I accept it.
I just want to accept it.
No, sorry, it's not enough.
Yeah, sorry, it doesn't work like that. I think the acceptance part is now when you've come to terms with the reality. And it also doesn't necessarily mean that acceptance is pretty. Acceptance isn't now it looks nice. Acceptance just means that now you're in a stage where you're willing to do the work that it takes to grow and create space, create capacity, do more. It's accepting that now my truth looks different, my picture looks different.
I wonder if in acceptance the jaw is finally starting to go a bit bigger.
Yes, the jaw will grow and get small again and get big again. Yeah. And I think acceptance is the process of realizing it's a jar and I'm the jar and I have to make the jar bigger.
Yeah.
It's like it's going to be my responsibility to move forward from this. And that's the acceptance part, the hard part.
Yeah, no, it is, but very important.
Yes.
All right, let's go on and let's talk about coping with grief. Really, on this show, we will talk about how we're going to cope with it, how we're going to handle it, and let's hear what Yolanda has to say about that.
Okay, so coping in healthy ways with grief, number one would be accepting that it's waves. It's not stages. It's not you're going to go one to the other. It is, I want you to see it as waves, ebb and flowing. It's normalizing that it's not linear. It's okay that some days you're going to feel okay and other days it's going to feel impossible, like getting out of bed. And sometimes you're going to laugh and some days you're going to cry, and that's really, really normal.
Yeah, it's normal. And yeah, it's just the thing that keeps on popping back in my mind is what you asked me in the beginning, how long is that swing? Because it doesn't matter how long it is, you're going to say it's long. It's there. Mm. It's there. You know, and that's one thing about grief you need to know. It's going to be there.
Yes, it's going to be there. And a second thing that can help in dealing with grief is creating rituals. So writing letters, memory boxes.
For me, what come back to me is traditions.
Yes.
Because let's say a family eats a six. To keep that tradition going is going to help you through the grief.
It is. Like keeping that structure, keeping that safe space. You said it earlier, you know, it's the loss of that safe space. Yeah. So continuing in certain rituals, continuing with certain things. In remembrance, like a memory box or writing.
It's important. It's important. It's also very important to talk about something that you've lost.
Yes. Storytelling.
Yeah, no.
Big one.
Do you remember this? You know, that kind of thing. It's fine. It's healthy.
Yes. Then nervous system tools is another way we can cope with grief. So what that refers to is when we're feeling these strong emotions like anger, like anxiety, our heart's pounding out of our chest, we feel like we can't breathe, doing something like breathing exercises, grounding exercises, physical movement, being mindful, can kind of just keep you in your body, keep you in the moment, stop you from rushing into this angst feelings of how am I going to cope and why is this happening, and just being overwhelmed by dealing with everything all at once. Okay, and maintaining that rituals and maintaining that nervous system also allows us to maintain connection, being mindful in that moment.
That connection is so important because it doesn't mean you need to forget the situation or remembering is good. Yeah.
It's not all bad. I mean, even if it's something like going through a divorce, it is extremely painful and extremely horrible. But it doesn't mean that that whole relationship was just horrible and rubbish and just throw it away. There's still really
good things
and beautiful elements of it. And you can hold on to that because if you paint that picture with that brush of, oh, it's a divorce and it was all horrible, then it's going to feel like, oh, I wasted so much time. And and it's not.
There were beautiful times.
And the last thing I would recommend for dealing with grief is seeking support, seeking professional help, support groups, faith communities, or close friends.
Yes, in Raja, that's what I also do is, with me, I work a lot on wellness. And when clients come to me, I talk to them about the other spheres of life that we can work on. that will carry you through the time that you breathe.
Yeah.
So yeah, interesting to know. Yes, you want to add?
Well, I kind of just want to kind of say how friends can support.
Yes.
So if you're the one that needs to help someone that's going through grief,
what can we do to help them?
I think it's important to not let someone know, like, let me know if you need anything.
And that's stupid.
It is. Let me know if you need anything. I don't even know what I need.
Yeah. For me, it's like, what do I need? I need this, but do I really need to call you for this?
Exactly. So I think the first thing to not do is to tell your friend, oh, let me know if you need anything. I think be proactive in supporting people through bringing them meals. Yes. Offering them a lift, making the everyday just a little bit
easier.
Help with admin, like,
yes,
Dion, can I phone people for you?
Yeah.
Can I fill in forms for you?
For me, in my life, it's about keeping house.
Yeah. Can I come clean for you?
Yeah, it sounds so stupid, but it's, for me, it's difficult.
Exactly.
When I go through a time where I really struggle, I can't wash floors and sweep. And it's not like I have this big place, it's just physically I'm not in a state to do it. And same with grieving. Mm-hmm. You go through a stage where you don't eat, you don't drink water, you don't do anything, but if you put a cup of coffee in front of a person, then he will drink.
Exactly.
I don't ask him, excuse me, are you thirsty? There's the coffee. If you're thirsty, drink.
And that's exactly, it's kind of like, what can I do to help lighten this load? So, like you said, offer lifts, sit with them without fixing something, help with admin, invite them for a walk. Just practical things that make their life.
Also, listen.
And listen. Just
and don't try to fix it.
So important.
Please don't try to fix my
problem.
You can't fix it.
And therefore, powerful phrases that if you're listening today and you want to have a few powerful phrases to take with you, things like, I'm here for you.
Yes.
This must be incredibly hard, acknowledging that person's feelings.
Empathy. Empathy is very important. If you don't know what empathy is, go look it up in the dictionary.
Exactly. Or tell me what today feels like. Only today. Not what just.
Or also, guys, people go through these things. They can't go take it day by day. Sometimes they need to take it hour by hour.
Minute by minute.
And that's okay. But allow people to say, I don't know what I'm doing this afternoon. Can I just focus on now?
Yes. And lastly, I think be supportive is just telling that person you don't have to be strong right now.
You can fall apart.
You can just be.
But what's better is you can fall apart while I'm there. It's fine. You can
feel what you need to feel. I'm there for you.
Yeah. Well, Yolanda, I must say I really enjoy the time with you.
Thank you.
I've learned a lot. I hope listeners, you also learned, and I hope that we will have a conversation soon.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, and well, all the best for you, Yolanda, until we meet again. This is The Balanced Mind. And if you feel that you really struggle with the loss of a relationship or a loved one or any kind of grief, and you feel you need to talk to someone, please contact me on Facebook on the Dion Bicycle page and send me a message so that we can talk about it and help you and you can have a better quality of life. I am looking forward to meeting you. My name is Dion Bicycle and you are listening to The Balanced Mind. Until we meet again soon. Cheers.